a little introduction to the significance of DD installation. There's a very nice verse, which many of the devotees in the assembly here know, that's spoken by Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where he is describing the 9 processes of bhakti. And one of them is what we're doing today. Of course, what we're doing today involves other processes too. They all start with hearing and chanting, shravana kirtanam. Any of our children, of course, who qualifies as a child here? Any of our children know? They're out playing, I guess. Shravanam kirtanam Vishnu smaranam padasevanam archanam bandhanam dasyam sakyam atmani vedanam. So one of those are 9 processes of bhakti. One of them is archanam, deity worship. They're not exactly sequential, but all the processes of bhakti begin with hearing and chanting. Shravanam kirtanam. The whole of devotional service to Krishna, Bhagavat Dharma, begins with hearing and chanting. We all begin with hearing and chanting, and it sustains us throughout our lives, hearing and chanting about Krishna. And flowing from that hearing and chanting come other expressions, like remembrance, or prayer, vandanam, or arshanam, deity worship, or dasyam, rendering service. Last night in Detroit, I spent the whole evening discussing sakyam as a expression, not just a rasa of sakya rasa with Krishna, like Arjuna was his friend, but how we as sadhakas can regard Krishna in that way. It's a nice topic. So, this is archanam. Now, there's another very nice reference, and that is in Rupa Goswami's teachings. Is there anybody here that doesn't know who is Rupa Goswami? Is there people that are new? Rupa Goswami? Don't know who is Rupa Goswami? Okay. Do you know who is Lord Chaitanya? Not so sure. The deity that we just installed is a deity of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is on our right. Or he's like this. And Lord Nityananda. So there are many ways to describe, but they manifested for this particular age, towards the beginning of Kali Yuga, the primary means of achieving perfection, or Yuga Dharma. There are different categories of avatars. Avatars is more than a movie. If avatars means one who descends from the spiritual world to this world, that's an avatar. And there's categories according to their function. There's manvantar avatars. There's manus, like the lawgivers of mankind. That's one category. And guna avatars. They preside over the modes of nature. Brahma, Vishnu, and Lord Shiva. They're guna avatars. There's Shakti Avesh avatars. Shakti Avesh avatars are those who are empowered with Lord's own Shakti, his own potency, to do something. An example is Prithu Maharaj. He's a Shaktyavesh avatar that is empowered to rule the Lord's Palana Shakti, or the Kumaras, the Lord's Gyan Shakti, or Brahma, the Lord's Srishti Shakti, his creative potency, like that. Empowered incarnations. Specifically, they act as if God, even they may not be their jivas, but they act with all the power of God. Shaktyavesh avatar. So, without the whole list, there's another category, Yuga avatar. They descend from the spiritual world for the purpose of delivering the Yuga Dharma. Satyu. Yuga Dharma is meditation. Jayate, meditation. Or Yajna in Dwarpa Yuga, the process of performance of sacrifice, Yajna. And in Dwarpa Yuga, Archana, deity worship. And in Kali Yuga, the process of chanting. Kalo, Hari Kirtana. In this age of Kali, the chanting of the holy name is the primary Yuga Dharma. And Lord Chaitanya, who appeared towards the beginning of Kali Yuga, Kali Yuga begins just after Krishna departs. When Dwarpa Yuga ends is when Krishna departs. There's only a little brief sandhi, a little juncture, a conjunction of time, and then Kali Yuga begins very quickly. And shortly after the disappearance of Krishna, the Yuga avatar appears, and that is Lord Chaitanya, descending from the spiritual world to this plane to give the means of achieving spiritual perfection. That's Lord Chaitanya. And Yuga Dharma is the chanting of the holy name. So along with the chanting of the holy name comes, that's the chanting of the holy name, is to cleanse the heart. Cheto darpana marjanam, cleansing the heart of all unwanted things. All impurities of heart are cleansed by the pure holy name. So along with the chanting of the holy name, there's teachings that are meant for guiding our activity. Because what's a heart that becomes cleansed but isn't properly guided? It can be sentiment, and even in the worst case, fanaticism. So everybody knows religious fanaticism, that's very dangerous. So we want guided activity. So teachings must be there. So the teachings are found in Srimad Bhagavatam. The teachings that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made primary reference to was Srimad Bhagavatam. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam is described as the Amala Purana. Each of the Puranas are addressing people in this age who are inclined to particular modes of nature. There's 18 principal Puranas or Maha Puranas, and there's 6, 6, and 6, goodness, passion, and ignorance, directed towards persons in this mode, persons in that mode. And for example, Sri Vaishnavas, their principal source of reference is two of the sattvic Puranas, Vishnu Purana and Padma Purana, principally. And they and the other Puranas refer to the Bhagavad Purana as the Amala Purana. Amala means spotless. No mixture of the modes. Because we know from Bhagavad Gita the modes are mixed. Goodness may be prominent, but there's some passion, some ignorance. And according to Krishna's teaching in Bhagavad Gita, there's competition for supremacy. So sometimes even a person in the mode of goodness may act in a passionate way or may exhibit anger in a mode of ignorance way. So then the goodness becomes prominent again. Like that, the modes of nature are mixed. There's similarly the Puranas are written for persons according to those modes of nature, but one amongst them is described by all of them as Amala Purana, the spotless Purana. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu referred to Srimad Bhagavatam principally, other literatures certainly, but principally Srimad Bhagavatam. And within the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a description of the process of devotional service. 9 processes, I mentioned them. Hearing, chanting, remembering. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. Padasevanam, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, worships the lotus feet. Bandhanam, Akura, he offered beautiful prayers and achieved perfection through offering prayers. Archanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani Vedanam, rendering service, becoming Krishna's friend, surrendering everything unto Krishna. Bali Maharaj surrendered everything unto Krishna and achieved spiritual perfection. Even his background wasn't so nice, from a Daitya family descent. But his heart was fully in surrender to Vamanadeva, and he achieved spiritual perfection through that anga, or that limb of bhakti. So this is one of those nine processes. And so Rupa Goswami, I asked before, someone may not know who is Rupa Goswami. He was a principal follower of Lord Chaitanya, who gave that Yuga Dharma, and Rupa Goswami was given the assignment to write in written form his teachings. Lord Chaitanya gave teachings but didn't write. Most great acharyas, think of the names of great acharyas, Madhvacharya or Ramanujacharya or Vishnuswami or Nimbarkacharya or any great acharya, they leave writings. They give teachings, but then they wrote them. Lord Chaitanya did it differently. He didn't write them. He asked Rupa Goswami to write them. He empowered him. It's written in his biography. He said, Lord Rupa Goswami, I give you full empowerment, full potency, not only to understand what I'm saying, but to then write and expand the teachings. So he did. And one of the teachings of Rupa Goswami is called Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu. Sindhu, an ocean of Bhakti Rasa. And it's Amrita, it's very nectarian. The Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada made a summary study. And in that summary study, Nectar of Devotion, it describes the process of devotion. How to. It's a nice how-to manual. How to render devotional service. And in that manual of devotional service, he describes, among other things, items that are favorable for bhakti. And then offenses to be avoided when you're performing devotional service. So when he's describing the favorable items, he says there are five amongst all 64 items that are most potent, particularly for this age, most potent. And any one of these five alone, just one of them, if performed without offense, is sufficient to awaken ecstatic love for the personality of Godhead in devotion to him. So one of them is this archana process. Chanting the holy name, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity form of the Lord, serving the devotees of the Lord, and residing in a sacred place, like Chicago, or Vrindavan, or Mathura, or any of the holy places where Krishna performed his pastimes. Ayodhya, and so many holy places, so many. Residing in such places is very potent. So we're going to be discussing just a little bit. I wanted to read some paragraphs where Prabhupada is describing the deity worship process. And it's taken from his commentary, his purport, to the verse spoken by Prahlad Maharaj to his father on the nine processes of bhakti. So the scene is Hiranyakashipu takes a little time out from conquering the universe and spends a little time with his son. And his son has been placed in the school of Shukracharya. And the sons of Shukracharya, Sunda and Amarika, they're in charge of the little boys. So Sunda and Amarika have been training Prahlad and his other friends. And his father comes home from conquering the universe and sits on the throne and asks Prahlad to come sit on his lap and very affectionately and puts his arm around his son and asks his son, tell me, what's the most wonderful thing that you've learned? Assuming, you know, how has Sunda and Amarika doing their job? Sometimes your parents will do that with their kids. How's it going in school? What have you been learning? only this was, what's the best thing that you've learned? And Prahlad Maharaj described the 9 processes of devotional service. That's the best thing I've learned. Now, it so happens that Hiranyakashipu didn't like to hear that, because Hiranyakashipu had a brother whose name is Hiranyaksha. And Hiranyaksha was killed by Lord Vishnu in his form as Varaha. That's described in the 3rd canto. Very, very early in the beginning of creation, the dawn of civilization, there was a demon, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. And there's a long story behind that. But because Hiranyaksha was killed by Varaha, he was the family enemy. He took a vow he was going to destroy Vishnu to get revenge for the death of his brother. So when his son said, the best thing I've learned is worship of Vishnu, oh, Hiranyakashipu was really upset. And it's more things happened. But just, so that's the context. Now here is Prabhupada's purport on the process of archana, one of the 9 angas of bhakti. It's very nice. Comes just after padasevanam. So, shravanam, kirtanam, Vishnu smaranam, padasevanam, archanam. After padasevanam comes the process of archanam, worship of the deity. If one is interested in the process of archanam, one must positively take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and learn the process from him. There are many books for archana, especially Narada Pancharatra. In this age, the Pancharatra system is particularly recommended for archana, deity worship. There are 2 systems of archana: the Bhagavata system and the Pancharatriki system. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no recommendation of Pancharatriki worship, because in this Kali Yuga, even without deity worship, everything can be perfectly performed simply through hearing, chanting, remembering, and worshipping of the lotus feet of the Lord. Rupa Goswami says, there's a long quote in Sanskrit, Sri Vishnu Shravane Parikshit Abhavad Vayasakai Kirtane, etc. Parikshit Maharaj attained salvation simply by hearing. Shukadeva Goswami attained salvation simply by chanting. He spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. Maharaj Parikshit heard Srimad Bhagavatam. He goes through each of any one of the 9 processes, has the potency to give spiritual perfection. All these great devotees served the Lord according to a particular process, but every one of them attained salvation and became eligible to return home back to Godhead. This is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is therefore recommended that initiated devotees follow the principles of Narada Pancharatra by worshipping the deity in the temple, especially for householder devotees. There's a few householder devotees here who are opulent enough in material possessions. The path of deity worship is strongly recommended. An opulent householder devotee who does not engage his hard-earned money in the service of the Lord is called a miser. One should not engage paid brahmanas to worship the deity. If one does not personally worship the deity but engages paid servants instead, he is considered lazy, and his worship of the deity is called artificial in scriptures. An opulent householder can collect luxurious paraphernalia for deity worship, and consequently for householder devotees the worship of the deity is compulsory. In our Krishna consciousness movement there are brahmacharis, grahastas, vanaprastas, and sannyasis, but deity worship in the temple should be performed especially by the householders. the brahmacharis, can go with the sannyasis to preach, and the vanaprastas should prepare themselves for the next status of renounced life sannyas. Grihastha devotees, however, are generally engaged in material activities, and therefore, if they do not take to deity worship, their falling down is positively assured. Deity worship means following the rules and regulations precisely that will keep one steady in devotional service. Generally, householders have children, and then the wives of the householders should be engaged in caring for the children, just as women acting as teachers care for the children in a nursery school. Paragraph. Grihastha devotees must adopt the archana vidhi, or deity worship, according to the suitable arrangements and directions given by the spiritual master. Regarding those unable to take to the deity worship in the temple, there is the following statement in the Agni Purana. Any householder devotee circumstantially unable to worship the deity must at least see the deity worship, and in this way he may achieve success also. The special purpose of deity worship is to keep oneself always pure and clean. Grihastha devotees should be actual examples of cleanliness. Paragraph. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's quite long. Very detailed. Deity worship should be continued along with hearing and chanting. Therefore, every mantra is preceded by the word Namaha. In all mantras, there are specific potencies of which the grihastha devotees must take advantage. There are many mantras preceded by the word Namaha. But if one chants the holy name of the Lord, he receives the result of chanting Namaha many times. By chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can reach the platform of love of God. One might ask, and what is the necessity of being initiated? The answer is that even though the chanting of the holy name is sufficient to enable one to progress in spiritual life to the standard of love of Godhead, one is nonetheless susceptible to contamination because of possessing a material body. Consequently, special stress is given to the archana vidhi. One should therefore regularly take advantage of both the Bhagavata process and the Panchanatrika process. Just going to read one more paragraph because it goes on into the do's and the don'ts, like in detail. These are things to do, these are things not to do, injunctions and prohibitions, details. Deity worship has two divisions, namely pure and mixed with fruitive activities. For one who is steady, deity worship is compulsory. Observing the various types of festivals, such as Sri Janmashtami, Ram Navami, and Nrisimha Chaturdasi, is also included in the process of deity worship. In other words, it is compulsory for householder devotees to observe these festivals. And naturally, although it's not totally necessary, it's natural that those festivals are observed in relation to particular deity. And so to some do's and don'ts, and then again some summary about the importance of deity worship. The process of devotional service doesn't begin with deity worship. Just as an illustration, when our ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada was given the instruction by his spiritual master to take these teachings of devotional service, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, to the English-speaking parts of the world, he came to America. He considered going to England because the connection between England and India was already well established through the rule of England and India, and there was no difficulty getting a visa, he could just go. But he thought, if I go to America, he said this later, if I go to America, it's like hunting a rhinoceros. If I come back, oh, I didn't get a rhinoceros, then who will say? So, but it'll be very challenging because people in America don't know anything about Krishna or devotional service or Vishuddha Sattva or anything. So he decided to come to America. And when he began, he didn't begin with deity worship. In fact, he didn't even begin with rules and regulations. He began with three things primarily. Lots of chanting, lots of prasadam, and little philosophy. My first encounter with Srila Prabhupada was like that at my university. A couple hours of chanting. I didn't know who he was. I just walked into a hall and Prabhupada was there on a stage chanting with Allen Ginsberg, you know, a famous or otherwise infamous American poet of the time. But he liked chanting Hare Krishna, so Prabhupada chanted Hare Krishna because he was famous. So lots of people came to see Allen Ginsberg, and guess what? They got to meet Prabhupada too. And so anyway, he chanted and chanted and chanted for about 2 hours. People didn't know what the chanting was, but it was very hearing a pure devotee chant the holy name. The whole place was lifted. And then he spoke very briefly, 8-10 minutes. And it was over. And then prasadam. So that's how he began. And then when he started in 26 Second Avenue, or even the Lower East Side, before he had 26 Second Avenue, same program. Chanting, some teachings, a nice prasadam. And gradually, purification took place. And then the followers then asked, Swamiji, aren't we supposed to be following some rules and regulations? And Prabhupada said, yes, I'll give them to you tomorrow. That's not where he started. Purification came first, bhakti, awakening bhakti came first, and then he gave the rules and regulations. But deity worship didn't appear yet. After further purification of following some do's and some don'ts, the four regular principles some of you may be familiar with, restrictions and some injunctions. Then through that gradual purification, then from pictures it then became deities. And the two principal deities that Prabhupada introduced were Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra, just like in Puri. And there's very interesting stories of how that began. Maybe some of you know Malati. It was in San Francisco, and she was in a import store, Pier Imports or something like that, Pier 1 Imports, and saw these little figures. She said, oh, that's cute. Maybe it's something to do with India. So she bought them. It was Jagannath, little carved Jagannath, this, you know, small. And then she brought them to Prabhupada and asked Prabhupada, is this something from India? And to instruct his disciple, Prabhupada immediately paid his obeisances. So everybody paid their obeisances and said, this is so auspicious. Jagannath has made his appearance in our ISKCON temple. And her husband, Shamasundar, he turned to him and said, can you make, you know, 4-foot-tall Jagannath deities? Carve them. Get some wood. And, you know, we were given these Mission Impossible things to do by Prabhupada all the time. We didn't know anything about anything. But, you know, here's the deities, and find some other pictures of deities of Jagannath, and carve Jagannath deities, and I want to have a big Jagannath Rath Yatra festival. And he was like exploding with enthusiasm of worshipping Lord Jagannath, the Lord of the universe. And let the world see, and the carts should be 4 stories tall. Not as big as Puri, but 4 stories tall, minimum. And, you know, so another devotee figured out how to make a Rath Yatra cart with having no budget. He went to a railroad yard, and they had discarded pieces of wood that they used, like really thick ones. Anyways, and they built a Rath Yatra cart, and the Jagannath worship began. That was the first Jagannath, because he's very merciful. And Prabhupada told us he's very merciful. So we should distribute the mercy of Lord Jagannath in the form of Rath Yatra. And so then one temple had Jagannath, some other temples got Jagannath deities. And then came Lord Chaitanya, or Gaura Nitai worship, just as we just installed Gaura Nitai, because they're very merciful. And they're merciful in a number of ways. They give their mercy, and they don't accept offense. That was really important for us, because we're very crude. We don't know, right from wrong, particularly when it comes to deity worship. So Gaura Nitai worship, but it didn't happen quickly. Prabhupada was very cautious. He trained us that this is very serious. Deity worship is very serious business, and he set standards. And then gradually he started translating Nectar of Devotion, because it gives some of the injunctions and prohibitions about deity worship, like he's done here in the seventh canto purport. So slowly, he introduced deity worship and the standards for deity worship, and he trained certain of his disciples in deity worship, and then they were to train others in deity worship, particularly Los Angeles for the Western world, and Mayapur for India. They became the standard for deity worship. Anyone that wanted to know how to do deity worship would go to those places. And we trained that by the person Prabhupada trained. Now there's a Mayapur Academy where for 4 months, if you have deities in your temple, you want to know what the standard is, send somebody, and in 4 months we'll teach them everything, A to Z. All the mantras and all the mudras and all the deity dressing and all the rituals connected to how to conduct the festivals. Like here he's mentioning Janmashtami, Ram Navami, Nrisimha Chaturdasi, but he doesn't say here how to, and then a little bit more how to, and then a whole lot how to. So depending upon one's interest and qualification, because the standards of deity worship are very important, and I'm not going to talk too much longer. Just for home worship, standards can be very much relaxed compared to temple standards. But there are two things, and sometimes Prabhupada said three things, that are most important in deity worship, whether it's temple or home. And the first he mentioned is cleanliness. The worship of the deity and the clothing and your body and your consciousness and the place should be very clean. Clean, clean. He used the word summit cleanliness. Deity worship must be done in that way. Maximum, not fanatical or whatever, germ phobia, whatever they call it. But clean. Very high standard of cleanliness. And then the second standard he gave was punctuality. For temples, at 4:30 in the morning is Mangalarti, and the pujari's there waiting. And when 4:30 comes, it's the conch goes. Now in home, maybe a little more relaxed, but punctuality is very important. So in your home, those of you that have deities and you just invited deities, some fixed time where you have some reading of your deity, and some flexibility certainly is possible, but ideal is same time every day. Because one of the things that deity worship does for householders, it helps increase the mode of goodness. Cleanliness is next to godliness, right? So cleanliness promotes goodness, and regulation promotes goodness. So your life of devotion will be increased by promoting the quality of goodness. And then what you eat, very important. When you invite your deity into your home, there should be a standard that you accept as your food only that which has been first offered to the deity. So sometimes the kids go to school, so they should take prasad from the deity, from the home. And sometimes the husband goes to work. They should take prasad from home, from the deity. That's a standard that you should strive for, or you could say stronger, you should maintain. Because now inviting the deity means this is his house. He's not a guest. It's his house. He's the proprietor. He's the Lord. and we're the servant, and we're serving Him. So things go first to Him, and then the family takes the prasad of what's been offered to the Lord. And that automatically also then the foods become foods in the quality of goodness, are only what can be offered to the deity. And so certain things that one might have eaten before, one doesn't eat anymore because it can't be offered to the deity. We only take deity prasad. So your consciousness, your whole lifestyle becomes elevated. And if one isn't ready for that, then wait till you're ready before you invite a deity into your home. And when you invite a deity into your home, you move to that standard. You may already be at that standard, but that should be the standard. So cleanliness, punctuality, and the third thing that Prabhupada said was sincerity. Whatever it is that you do, you offer very sincerely. Just as an example of this, when Prabhupada installed the deities in Los Angeles, he called them Rukmini Dwarkadish, because it was a very opulent temple. So a suitable name was Rukmini Dwarkadish, the Lord of Dwarka. Rukmini Dwarkadish. And during the course of the deity lecture, the installation lecture, after performing the Abhishek and everything that we just did, the Pran Pratishtha, Prabhupada was describing the consciousness of sincerity in which one should... here comes the deity. Ready or not. Shishi Gornatai Ki. So he spoke like this: My dear Lord Krishna, I have no qualification to serve you. I am very fallen. I am very low. And then he went on in saying, I'm rotten. I'm fallen. I'm puffed up. Then his voice started to crack like emotion and say, but kindly accept. It's all that I have to offer. My devotion is all I have to offer. Kindly accept. In that way, there should be sincerity in what you offer to Krishna and your deity in your home. And in course of doing like that, something happens. There's a reciprocation, because the deity form is not just wood or brass or stone or metal. The deity form is in that feature accepting our worship. Krishna or Chaitanya is accepting our worship, and you'll see in the course of time some relationship and an attachment develops to the point where you look, you anticipate festival days and making nice decoration, making a special outfit, buying some special flowers, inviting people to have something, you know, that you're thinking for their pleasure. Not in other words, one's social, natural, we're social beings. We require friendship and love and relationships. That becomes directed towards the deity, and then others and the relationships with others in terms of the deities and the chanting of the holy name, discussing spiritual topics. Your life becomes spiritualized with Krishna in the center. You'll see how that works. By observing the rules and regulations are like taking wet wood, placing the wet wood near fire to make the wet wood dry, so then you can put it in the fire and then it will ignite. The rules and regulations are like that. It's meant to purify us. In and of themselves, that's not the essence. It's to help us come to the quality of goodness. So from the quality of goodness, we can enter into transcendence, beyond the modes of nature, and fixed in devotion to the personality of God. So I'll stop with that. The process of hearing and chanting goes very nicely with the process of deity worship. One enhances the other, and the other enhances the one. They run like parallel. First, of importance-wise, is hearing and chanting. And from the hearing and chanting, then, in course of time, deity worship. And the deity worship further helps to purify, so that when the hearing and the chanting activity goes on, it ignites. And as the hearing and chanting ignites, it adds a lot of enthusiasm to the deity worship. One helps the other. So, you've invited a lot of guests to your home, and as guests, our function is to somehow give blessings to this event of he's not just a guest, the proprietor of the house now, turning proprietorship over to the master of the house, Gornatai, and give our blessings that this beginning, this worship process begins nicely, and then in an auspicious way, and then continues on very nicely going into the future. Okay, so any comments or discussion? Anybody like to bring something up? Yes?
Hare Krishna, that I was very curious to know what is the name of these ladies. Now, is there any... I know they are Gauranitai, but is there any specific names given to
these ladies? I didn't think of the name yet. But they look like they like to dance. Nataraj. Gaura Nataraj. Nitai, Gaura Nataraj. Anything? Anything else? Yes?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Could you expand more on the following? Gaura Nitai is very merciful, but they don't take offenses. So could you expand a little bit more on that?
Sure. We'll take it from a different direction. In the chanting, Prabhupada writes in the biography of Lord Chaitanya's life, Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the primary means of deliverance for the sage is chanting of the holy name of God. Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Harer Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva Gatiranyata. The verse is there that says, in this age of Kali, it's the not only the principle, na asti eva, there isn't an alternative to the chanting of the holy name of Hari. So amongst the unlimited names of Hari, there's one particular mantra identified in the Upanishads as Maha mantra, especially effective in this age of Kali. And it spells it out. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And that Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is especially effective for delivering one to the stage of perfection. But, there's always a but, Padma Purana says, if there are offenses committed against the holy name, then that ultimate benefit of love of God will never take place. And so it identifies offenses to be avoided against the chanting of the holy name. 10 in number. And so they're listed. So those who are chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra should know what those 10 offenses are and should carefully guard against those 10 offenses. So something that helps avoid offenses against the holy name is the purification that comes from chanting the Panchatattva mantra, Lord Chaitanya and his associates, because they don't take offense. That is to say, they're in the mood of devotees of Krishna. And they're wishing for us to worship Krishna. It's something like Hanuman likes to worship more than likes. His heart is worshiping Ram. And if Hanuman sees somebody trying to worship Ram, how does Hanuman feel? Very happy. Very happy. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, similarly, in the mood of a devotee of Krishna, wishes to see people worship Krishna, chant Krishna's name, become Krishna's devotee. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. So, when calling, Chaitanya Charitamrita says, when calling the names of Lord Chaitanya and his principal associates, then they don't take any offense. The unfortunate persons, the Jaghai and Mudhais, the fallen persons of this age, they don't mind. Just chant Krishna's holy name. So, similarly, by worshipping Gornatai, they're very merciful. They accept our service and they overlook our impurity, our contaminations and our offense. It doesn't mean, oh, that's okay then, I can just do whatever. And one should not think like that. But one should understand at the same time, they're very merciful, they overlook. I'm worshipping this form of the Lord who is so merciful, he overlooked my offenses. Let me, because he's so merciful and so kind, let me very carefully execute to the best of my ability the worship of Gornatai. And then through the worship of Gornatai, then I can approach Radha and Krishna, where offense is very serious. One should be very, very, very qualified and very strict in their worship to worship Radha and Krishna. Like that. They're merciful. They overlook the offenses and just accept the service. That's their nature. Something? Okay, are we ready for Arti? Do you have a question? She has a very soft voice, so I'll repeat her question. Somebody has their phone on. Okay, go ahead.
Swami, you were describing Srila Prabhupada's coming to that point of introducing deity worship, and that there was a lot of hearing and chanting prior to that. So, I'm just taking that and looking at it from the angle of, if householders have deity worship going on, but there's a lot of struggle with the, I guess it's hearing and chanting, particularly chanting of the Maha Mantra, the daily sadhana practices. How does that impact the deity worship, or does the deity worship impact the chanting, the japa chanting?
Did you get a question? Could you hear?
No.
It's subtle, so I'll do my best. I described Prabhupada introduced lots of chanting before he introduced deity worship. So once there's deity worship, there's also chanting going on. Now how does one affect the other? How does deity worship affect chanting? How does chanting affect deity worship? Got it? Okay. I said a little bit before, they help one another. You can say the converse. If I'm inattentive while chanting, if I'm making offenses while chanting, it's going to negatively impact my deity worship. And if I make offenses in deity worship, it's going to negatively impact my chanting. Now I'll go the other way. If I'm careful in chanting, it will positively assist the deity worship. I will be in much better consciousness in thinking, this is Krishna that I'm worshipping. Krishna is very kindly accepting this offering that I'm making, patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati, with some feeling of love, it increases the feeling of love, and then therefore naturally the sense of reciprocation of love. It'll enhance my deity worship if I do my chanting nicely. And conversely, so that's the good side. If I do my deity worship nicely, I'm following the regulations and consciously keeping myself internally clean as well as externally clean and approaching the deity in a sincere mood, now I'm going to go do my chanting. It's going to help my chanting. One helps the other, provided we're being careful to avoid offenses. Therefore, in Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu or Nectar of Devotion, he describes the principal means is chanting, and he describes the deity worship that assists, and gives long descriptions of the do's and the don'ts, because one should, it's not just doing the do's and avoiding the don'ts that makes things nice. It's the consciousness behind, because otherwise we're not going to do the do's and avoid the don'ts. We're just, you know, cavalier. Oh, some of them I'll do and some of them I won't do, and sometimes I'll do some and sometimes I won't do those, and whimsical. That's offensive. The attitude is offensive. It's not personal. It's offensive. But if we approach the deity in a personal way and guided by these regulations, then Krishna is very pleased and we feel that. And that helps our chanting. Same, but, you know, towards chanting, towards the deity worship. So they're meant to go hand in hand. But first, priority-wise, first is chanting and hearing. Okay? Sure. No one else has their hand up.
We had a discussion yesterday in the Bhakti Riksha.
Okay.
One of the application points.
Can you hear back there? Can you hear? Yes? Okay. Yes.
One of the application points from the Bhakti Riksha yesterday was a feeling of gratitude for the pure devotees in our life, for us to be able to do service. And that's what I was coming to me now, that the deities in our life, either in picture form or actually in murti form, they're all here by the mercy of the pure devotees. So that's what was coming from me.
Okay, so just some appreciation.
Yeah, and I was wondering if you have...
Well, Prabhupada speaks of it, two things. Prabhupada speaks of it here in the purport that I read, that one should get trained, because it's not a whimsical matter, it's a matter that it must be carefully guided. Then he goes right into saying there's books, but even in the application of the books, one requires guidance. How do you apply the book knowledge to practical? And so those who guide one and assist one, that's there should be gratitude towards those persons. It's like, you know, this is Vedic culture. When there's a qualified teacher, we'll say guru, it doesn't just mean initiating guru, it's just a teacher, it's a guru. A qualified teacher, to receive what that teacher has to offer, one requires gratitude. Then one's heart is open, then I can receive. And when you receive and you're feeling gratitude, you receive, the fullness just wells in one's heart. And then, you know, devotion. And then you apply it. So it helps all the way around. It increases the capacity to become a qualified follower of that teacher. It's just Vedic culture. Or you can say even, it's culture. And the Western paradigm is devoid of culture. It's just missing. I remember, you know, when I was little, there used to be a thing that we would bring an apple to our teacher. I don't remember where that came from, and I certainly know nothing about Vedic culture, but Vedic culture is that the student would come and make an offering of some grain or something to the teacher. And that way the teacher wasn't paid, but it was from the student, and the student would give something to the teacher. And sometimes flowers, and sometimes, just a gift. It's like an expression of gratitude. Not just a formality, but an expression of gratitude. And it made a big difference. But then suddenly quickly, that disappeared. And then, who remembers your first grade teacher or your third grade teacher or fifth grade teacher? Don't even remember their name. There's no relationship. It's just a mechanical thing. And they don't remember you either. So how are they expected to transmit something of great value to someone who's just a mechanical arrangement? That's not how transcendental knowledge, not just the how to do deity worship or receive the deity, here's a deity, see you later. It's a path to transcendence, and it requires, as the relationship with the deity, it requires someone to guide one in that process properly. That's the Vedic system. Yes?
The question was about the overlooked offenses.
They're what? They overlook offenses.
Yeah, but in the example of Chota Haridas, and it said that while reading Bhagavatam, like in the introduction part, it said, till you take shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, any offenses, any even the most horrible things Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had gifted, but once you take the shelter, any offenses cannot be removed.
Well, in the case of Chota Haridas, it was very purposeful. After Chota Haridas was forbidden Lord Chaitanya's association, Lord Chaitanya would go and hear him sing after he left his body. There was deep affection for him. It was instructive. The instruction for everybody was, if you're in this renounced order, do not dally with women. And he was engaging Chota Haridas as an instructive example in that principle. So he, Lord Chaitanya, who was so strict with those in the renounced order, at the same time, and incredibly knowledgeable, so much so that he was defeating the greatest of scholars left and right. So he wasn't a sentimentalist. He was fixed in knowledge and fixed in detachment. Considered the worship of the gopis as the most elevated expression, not out of sentiment, not out of attachment for the opposite sex, out of appreciation of the transcendental nature of Krishna's pastimes. So it was purposeful that his followers, after that time, could understand those that are in the renounced order must be very strict. Very strict. Very strict. So he was engaging him as one to teach an example to others because of his intimacy. Sometimes that's done. Someone who is very intimate, who is to set an example for others, one will instruct through that person. And others can understand, this is serious business. Okay? All right. I think we'll end. Arti?
Just a 5-minute kirtan, then we remove our
dog. Okay. Thank you very much.